And now we're going to hear another perspective on the Second Chance Act from Mark Kleiman. He is director of the Drug Policy Analysis Program at UCLA, and he joins us by phone from his home in Los Angeles. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You heard Mr. Benninghoff's argument. Why shouldn't offenders get a new start after they've served their time and stayed clean?
It's mostly a good idea. I'm for almost everything in the Second Chance Act. I'm disappointed by some of the things it doesn't contain. It doesn't contain any reference to supervision. And I think if we don't get the supervision part of post-release management right, we're going to continue to have very high recidivism rates.
What would that supervision look like?
The supervision would look like what parole looked like in the 1950s, an institution with a small number of rules, a fairly high ratio of staff to people being managed, capacity to monitor whether those rules are being complied with, and very quick and certain sanctions for every violation. People who've been basically in a cage 24 hours a day for a period of years can't usually manage complete liberty very well. And just as they need services, they need some control. And we're not providing that either. So I think the Second Chance Act fixes about half of what's wrong with the current post-release system. And I'm for it. I guess I'm a little nervous about the blanket rule that anybody's conviction gets expunged after X years. I have a friend who's a lawyer who was working with a company that had gone bankrupt because its bookkeeper had embezzled all the money. And it turned out that that money was going to pay the restitution the bookkeeper owed from her previous embezzlement.
Oh, dear.
Now, it does seem to me that that employer probably had a right to know about the prior conviction, even though it's true. That would mean that that person would continue to suffer disability even after she'd finished serving her term. Well, you know, it's life in the big city. So there are competing interests here. I'm not sure a blanket expungement rule is desirable. On the other hand, it's certainly true that the better we make the non-criminal opportunities for people getting out of prison, the better chance we have that they'll become non-criminals.
Do you think that there's a general consensus now that the current system of post-incarceration, whatever happens to people once they leave prison, it's not working?
Yes, I think that's a consensus statement.
So why do you think it is that there seems to be so little movement to put something in place to reintegrate ex-offenders?
Oh, I think there is. I think the Second Chance Act is likely to make its way through. In general, the discussion about criminal justice in this country pays much too much attention to catching people and incarcerating them, and not nearly enough attention to supervising them in the community. So the criminal justice system is a little bit like the healthcare system. We spend all the money on the inpatients, don't have anything left for the outpatients. There are between 6 and 7 million people under criminal justice supervision in this country. 2.1 are in prison or jail. They get about 80% of the total spending. The other 20% goes to the more than two-thirds of the supervised population that's not in prison or jail. That seems to me a mistake. It's a vicious circle. System works badly, therefore gets no resources. Since it gets no resources, it keeps working badly. And if we really want to get a handle on crime control, we have to learn how to control people's behavior when we're not paying the room and board bill.
I asked Mr. Benninghoff this question, and I wanted to ask you, too. Let's assume that we agree that incarceration serves three functions: protecting the population from somebody who's committed a crime or may be violent and may commit one again, retribution, and rehabilitation. Why shouldn't the kind of supervision you're talking about happen while people are in prison, the kind of teaching them to function better within society?
It should, but there's very limited capacity to do so, and it's not entirely because the prisons work badly. The psychologists have a term, state-dependent learning. You can teach people things in prison, but they're mostly going to remember them while they're in prison. The civilian environment is so different that behavior change that takes place in prison generally is not going to carry over very well unless there's out-of-prison follow-up. So drug treatment, for example. Well, you can teach somebody not to use drugs while he's in prison. Most prisons don't have very many drugs available, at least compared to some non-prison neighborhoods. But that's not going to lead him not to use drugs once he gets out. What you can teach in prison is skills, right? So I'd get rid of most of the prison treatment program and concentrate almost entirely on literacy and job-relevant skills. Because skills, unlike behaviors, do transfer from one setting to the other. But yes, there's some of that that we can do in prison. It would certainly be good if prison was a less perfect reproduction of a violent neighborhood. That is to take people who have been criminally active and many of whom grew up in abusive households and put them in an environment that combines noise, violence, and idleness. Seems to me like a bad way to prepare them to go back into the real world.
All right. Mark Kleiman is director of the Drug Policy Analysis Program at UCLA. He joined us by phone from his home in Los Angeles. Mr. Kleiman, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
If you have an experience trying to get back on your feet after having been incarcerated, or have a family member or close friend who's trying to do so, or if you've been a victim of a crime and want to weigh in on what should happen after incarceration, we'd like to hear from you. Tell us more. Write to our blog at npr.org/tellmemore.